Welcome back to episode 265. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Tim. Thank you so much. How are you doing?
Very well. Well, interesting week, of course, as always. Where do you want to start? Domestic insanity or international insanity?
You know, my head spins. You pick.
Well, I saw one thing. This is a domestic insanity. There was a bill submitted in the U.S. House of Representatives to create a national museum for homosexuality. The debate is whether the Smithsonian Institute will take it over. Will be part of the Smithsonian project. But yeah, it's apparently. So there we go. That's important that we celebrate.
Yeah, you know, they're just trying to normalize it. and obviously, you know, people just have to hold their ground and bear in mind that in terms of the evolutionary probability statistics, you can only have about 0.5% non-productive individuals, you know, in other words, homosexual genes. So this is a fringe in fact within biology.
Well, in keeping with homosexualized war on nature and logos, when they build this thing, will the facility's exit signs actually mean points of entry?
I mean, the mind reels, you know, so, and, you know, then of course, from here, you get into, they'll have transgender museums, mm-hmm. Days of remembrance. And, you know, they infest the culture in a very systematic way. It kind of, you know, there's kind of actually at this point, you can almost see patterns, you know, of how they start out here and then you end up here. But the public, you know, I mean, you just have to resist. You cannot let your children go to it. You have to talk about homosexuality as it is a biological reality. But you also have to talk about the moral consequences of homosexuality, and you have to talk about the requirement of heterosexual couples, not just for having other generations, but for having a sane functioning culture. No other kind of sexualized culture has ever succeeded, right? And then I think from then the conversation just goes, well, let's talk about who's doing this and why, you know, because if you don't go to that conversation, then it's sort of incomplete. But that's what I just tell when I'm asked. I go, here's my opinion. What you got to do?
Well, we had another case of FBI abuse. Apparently, there was a raid on this gentleman in Pennsylvania. He's a well-known pro-life author. He's a sidewalk counselor and a father of seven. Apparently his house was raided last Friday, according to LifeSite News. According to his wife, Ryan Marie, who spoke with LifeSite News, he regularly drives 2 hours south of Philadelphia every Wednesday to sidewalk counsel for 6 to 8 hours at two different abortion centers. And this is where his trouble began, apparently. And the raids, I think they were reported 25 to 30 agents swarmed the property with around 15 vehicles around 7 o'clock in the morning. They surrounded the house with rifles in a firing position and started pounding on the door. And this is apparently an execution of a warrant to arrest him for a charge of him violating the FACE Act, which is a freedom of access, something federal law that's never been actually been, no one's ever been prosecuted on it. But it's one of these laws that are at least constitutionally dubious, but they're designed to, you know, to secure access to an abortion clinic. And this stems from-
It's the Freedom of Access to Clinic Entrances Act.
That's what it, okay, yeah. So it's, I think Chucky Schumer sponsored the bill. That's right, yeah. And so apparently this stemmed from an altercation he had with a 72-year-old activist outside, the pro-abortion activist, I think Brian Love is his name. And he apparently routinely escorts women into the clinic to facilitate their abortions. And he got into a verbal altercation with Mr. Hawk. Apparently he was yelling obscenities into Mr. Hawk's face and his children's face, calling his father his obscene names. And that's when Mr. Hawk interceded and pushed him. And then he fell to the ground, filed an assault charge. Then he sued him. No one prosecuted in Philadelphia, even to Krasner, Philadelphia, that's the Soros prosecutor, Krasner didn't prosecute. And the lawsuit was dropped because Mr. Love didn't show up at court. But nevertheless, it somehow got the attention of the FBI, Merrick Garland's FBI, Merrick Garland's Justice Department. And they used it as a pretext to execute a 25 to 30 man raid on this man's property. And when it gets down to it, he's being raided for getting into a shoving match outside an abortion clinic in Philadelphia a year before, on which no one was hurt or anything. And that's pretty much it. So this is obviously an intimidation. That can put him in jail for this. No prosecutor's going to succeed. Apparently they have a tape of it. And he was simply defending his son against the verbal assault of an old, dirty old man, apparently.
Yeah, and he actually, Huck, the guy who's the subject of the raid, he just attempted to get between the guy and his son. Mm-hmm. And he would put his hand on his chest to create space because he didn't like this person yelling obscenities at an 11-year-old boy. And so as he attempted to create the space, then, you can see it in the video, there was, this guy, then he took umbrage and was sort of that crazy and stuff. And so the DA, as you point out, wouldn't take it as a criminal case. They just said, no, that's just nothing there. Now, that's the framework to understand then the application of the FACE Act in this instance, right? Mm-hmm. If you had a real altercation where blows were thrown or, some violence or someone thrown to the ground, but this isn't even a pushing match.
No.
And so the thing is that is the uncontested framework, right? This is what happened. Now, from there, Garland decided to apply the FACE Act, and not only apply it, but because this kind of portly, sweet guy, never threw a punch and tried to get in between this guy who was yelling obscenity to his son, Garland said, well, the only way we can handle this kind of dangerous individual is with full SWAT tactical gear, and we've got to come in force with basically a battalion of these guys. It was unbelievable. I mean, the number I got was 19. Mm-hmm. And they were all in TAC gear, right? Mm-hmm. And came in through the door, smashed through the door, came in. And there they are, this charming, wonderful little Christian family. And here come the Gestapo jackbooted thugs, of Merrick Garland. And, I will just say, Tim, this is just obviously propaganda. It's Garland is attempting to intimidate Christians. This is what it's for. There is no other.
Essentially, the picture of his family, right?
Right. Yeah. So that's the enemy.
That's the enemy, right?
Right. The idea that you'd need to have like 20 tactical gear guys come in with automatic weapons. So this is preposterous. Why would he do it? Well, it's to intimidate. It's to just make the white male and the Christian male to know that there is this overwhelming force of government that for all of your opinions that are not in compliance with the state, we are going to destroy you.
Yeah, every pro-lifer out there or any activist out there who's ever had a mild altercation is now thinking, this is going to have a chilling effect. Should I be as vocal or as active as I have been? Unless I suffer a raid from the FBI,
and of course this is Garland, who is sworn an oath to defend the First Amendment, right? so that doesn't seem to be something that's really high on his list, because this is obviously being done to intimidate and to frighten, well, specifically Christians, but everyone really who has any kind of thinking, you know, that might be against the state dictum. I mean, it's really just the trappings of a brutal dictatorship. There's no, I mean, what would you say about it? To me, it is propaganda. It is demonstration of the power of the state, demonstration of the ruthlessness and the lawlessness of the state, and it's just notifying the citizens you live in a dictatorship, and if you get out of line, then you're going to be smashed.
Yeah, I think that the vision of a old, I think the love character is Jewish. He is Jewish, of a Jewish guy yelling obscenities in a child's face, and you not being able to prevent it without suffering arrest is a good metaphor for the country, isn't it?
It is.
You just can't stop it.
In fact, I would even say that's probably what piqued Garland's attention, was that image, that this is, that it was chosen because of the absurdity of it as justification for the raid, and that's just what message they wanted to send.
And then, of course, this is coming off last year when we found out that Garland had targeted parents who had the audacity to show up at school meetings to oppose critical race theory, COVID stuff, and also the transgender agenda. And it turned out that his family was profiting off the critical race theory curricula or program, because his son-in-law and daughter run a program to make millions off I think it's called Panorama or something, providing material for such programs. This is a demoralizing material, anti-white material that's sold to various school systems throughout the country. There, it's paid for by the taxpayer to demoralize the children going to the school, and they're making money off it. So not only are they actively engaged in demoralizing the dwindling white majority, they're making money in the process. But there was a recent interview with Dan Bongino, a suspended agent, Special Agent Kyle Serafin. He was suspended in June after he revealed, I think he went to a congresswoman in New Mexico and as a whistleblower, and announced that Garland had created a tag called Edu Officials to track down school board meeting related threats on email sent to the Justice Department. Agents were sent to investigate parents. Most people just open and close cases because there's nothing there. But thousands of parents presumably now have files on them for simply showing up school meetings. And of course, this is a huge scandal. Of course, this whistleblower is not getting any protection. He's suspended without pay. So we have that abuse. Of course, we have this in the context of recent abuses by the FBI regarding the Trump administration. Of course, the raid of Mar-a-Lago, the harassment and arrest of many Trump officials, Clark, his attorney. We have the that incident where he was hauled out in front of his house, middle of the night. I mean, this is just for being an attorney for the president. So again, it's almost as if they don't even care about the optics anymore. In fact, maybe they do care about the optics, because the optics they want to be is intimidation. They want people.
Exactly. I mean, it just is. I mean, to me, this is just absolutely clear as a bell. There's no reason for this, other than to intimidate. And they're creating or trying to create the new American slave class, where with mental control the slaves would never even think of what this will do to him is get rid of thinking, right? That's what it's for. You won't have the thought about, well, gee, abortions are, when you look at it, it has kind of the idea that it's really just organized genocide. There is a kind of immoral force that is driving it forward. It's not just about women's health. The more I look at it, we need to have a discussion, but you would never have that thought because you've seen these images of, the jackbooted thumbs thug smashing through the door, and they're in the tack gear, and you're just sitting there quivering in the living room holding onto your children. So, the citizens need to gain courage from this and remember that, whenever any form of government becomes destructive, right, of the pursuit of happiness, the people are required to abolish and institute a new government. So they control the political system, you know, in illegal ways, and then they are setting up an intellectual, you know, psychological slave state. So we just have to find our courage. That's really, you know, what I would I would think is the right response here, is that we're being genocided with the poison medicine, and then we're being you know, put in these intellectual like slave structures, so we can't even rebel against it. You know, I would say that these things are at the point of diminishing returns. I don't think that they're going to scare a single person into new behavior. What I think that it will happen now is that the herd, the frightened, are, you know, you can't control, they don't need any more control. You know, they are just gone. They've lost their souls in their way. And they're soon going to get sick and have whatever awaits them, you know, in the future, physically. But the purification is occurring. And the people who were strong enough to not take the vax, or who took it because they simply had to in order to support their family and hated taking it, I mean, this group will emerge very shortly, in my opinion. And it's, the question is just what organizational principles will it have, you know, and what will the goals be? Because we are one way or another, we're headed for both chaos and civil war. And just to digress, I mean, you look at the Nord Stream pipelines being blown up, and you can see that the degree of lawlessness and sort of violence that the various state entities, the governments, are engaging in now is really elevating, isn't it?
Yeah, it's escalating. The again, we're getting back to sort of what they're doing on the domestic front. Is there, what, again, this raid on Mr. Hawks and his family's house, of course, is a clear another sign that they're simply criminalizing normal political dissent, or you just even participation in what we used to think was a free and open political process. You get another example of this is the Anti-Defamation League Center of Extremism, or Center on Extremism.
They put the 1/6.
Yeah, that.
By the police into the congressional grounds. They put them in a Guantanamo situation completely illegally, and are just keeping them as show prisoners at this point. This is like the Soviet Union, you know. And so this is what now the citizen has in his mind when he has the thought about, well, should I rebel? But as I said, I honestly think these things are not going to succeed, because they will succeed completely with the fraction that will soon be leaving us, but they are not going to succeed an iota with those that are already realizing the kind of world they live in.
The Anti-Defamation League's Center on Extremism recently reported, and this is what they do here, they more than 370 people who currently work in law enforcement, including as police chiefs and sheriffs, and more than 100 who are currently serving in the U.S. military, and more than 80 people who are running for public office or are serving in public office, are members of Oath Keepers. Now, that's sort of a civic nationalist organization that's dedicated to promoting fidelity to the U.S. Constitution. But according to the ADL, this data raises concerns regarding the influence of extremists in law enforcement and military who are entrusted with protecting the country. Now, it's not surprising that the extremist, as ADL defines them, identifies, these extremists are mostly white Christian males. But since when is being, you know, devoted to the U.S. Constitution extreme? So it's funny. But nevertheless, the ADL did not bother to investigate the influence of Jewish extremists or Israeli agents in the government or military, which is considerable to say the least. If you look at Biden's cabinet, I think 75% of them are Jewish and 2% of the American population is Jewish. Nor did the ADL spend any time looking into Black radical groups like Black Lives Matter and Antifa, which the FBI claims is only an idea. And of course, there is no analogous organization defending whites or Christians from defamation by Jews, at least not one enjoying the power and prestige of the ADL, which regularly works with law enforcement and who's often, you know, baseless and self-serving claims are treated as gospel by the Department of Justice or FBI and mainstream media for that matter. So that's this type of calumny. Again, they're delegitimizing anything that any group or group that that opposes, you know, their agenda, you know, and it's ethnic warfare.
Yeah, they're second class citizens.
Yeah,
they really don't have normal rights of citizenry. They have gained control over the legal and political structure, and now we can see what they intend to do with their power. And so, you know, this is it's just, this will be the time when, you know, our courage and our souls will be tested, because we are going to have to fight. And that requires courage. You know, you look at this, the events surrounding Hauk, you know, the guy, the father who was Garland raided his home, you know, using the FACE Act as a principle. I mean, if he had been, you know, say Jewish, and his crime had been trying to keep someone who was anti-Semitic away from his son, what do you think, you know, that parallel kind of experience would have produced as far as, you know, I mean, the person who hurled obscenities would be locked up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we are second class citizens. We just haven't gotten the memo yet. But, you know, I make these statements and then I always add to them the fact that this is good. I mean, to me, we've been second class citizens for 100 years. We are now finally at the point where they are revealing themselves, the political class, as slave owners. And so this is, having clarity enables us to actually have strategy in trying to fight back against it.
Yeah, apparently, there was a rumor that peace was breaking out in the Ukraine. So someone decided to bomb or attack the Nord Stream 1 and Nord Stream 2 pipelines that feed natural gas into Europe. The incident occurred earlier this week. It was reported that the pipelines suddenly lost pressure. There's some speculation that maybe an underwater drone attack was used. Apparently there were naval or NATO maneuvers being conducted near the area, so that's good cover for the attack. U.S. government at first was silent, I think is denying it. James Clapper and James Brennan said U.S. didn't do it, so we know they're telling the truth.
Yeah.
Whatever that's worth. In fact, I think James Brennan actually came out and said that Russia might have done it. There was an interesting, I saw this it was a tweet or something I saw here. Where is that? The logic of this.
I saw a funny picture.
Yeah, Russia. Here we go. Russia invested billions in the Nord Stream 1 and 2, then sailed undetected all the way to Poland, exactly where the U.S. Navy was testing underwater drones days prior, and blew up their own pipeline.
Right. Which they could have just, if they wanted to shut off the gas, they could have just turned the valve. But I saw a photo, a picture, it was, you know, kind of a comic picture, which it had the explosion and a passport had floated up to the surface and it was a passport. So they were playing off of the 911 passport, you know, like planted evidence,
yeah.
You know. And yeah, I mean, there really isn't any rationale for the Russians to have done this. The only people who benefit from it, I would say, are, you know, the oligarchs. The only a state could have done, it's not the sabotage of a, you know, small group, because the bomb was, you know, undersea detonation is pretty complicated. And the bomb was, I think, about 1,200 pounds, they estimate. I mean, that's like a small nuke of TNT, the equivalent. So, you know, who would have such a weapon? You know, the idea that it was, you know, like, was it the US, Ukraine, NATO? It was all of them, right? Everyone in that world, the political power of that world, you know, they had a rationale for it. And as far as I'm concerned, it was just done for the raw spectacle of it on one hand, because it's very distracting. But on the other hand, it creates a rationale for the coming freezing to death in Central Europe. I mean, that's really the real purpose here. It's just, they're going to freeze Central Europe to death. And by getting rid of the pipeline, they're just making it impossible to come up with the necessary energy to heat the homes, right? You know, the governments will claim they're doing everything they can, but we're sorry. And here comes the coldest winter in 100 years, you know, for Germany and Austria. So this is just part of the genocide. It's just an aspect of it. There was actually another pipeline, didn't get a lot of news, but that was shut off to Italy by the Russians last week. And so that all of the nat gas that comes from Russia is being shut down. And nat gas from other areas is getting to be more problematic. They're just really, they're going to create the situation where there's just no physical way that they can meet the needs of the public. And then it'll be up to, you know, to the public to try to get through this winter. You know, as you know, I know people in Germany. I mean, they are openly talking. In fact, it was interesting last week on RT, there was a group they had, and one of them brought up the fact that the Morgenthau plan was being discussed by the public, but not by the political class. The political class would run away from the expression, right? It's not in the newspapers, but the public it's just part of vernacular now. So you see, this is actually good, isn't it? Because the public is becoming more clarified what they're up against. The political class is genociding the German people. That's what is occurring in Central Europe this winter. And this whole absurdity in the Ukraine is just the rationale so that the genocide cannot be clearly seen. It's a consequence of the struggle with the Russians, right? But this is ridiculous. All of these things are just, you know, in a clear trajectory to get to the middle of winter and have no way to heat the homes. And I think that the people who took the vaccine, especially Tim, I think these guys are going to have trouble with their immune systems, and you're just going to have a huge body count in Central Europe this winter.
Yeah, a lot of people pointing fingers, and there was an article that I read by Kit Knightley. And he said, forget the blame game. Nord Stream sabotage is about Great Reset and nothing else. He said, the question one it seems to keep asking the last years is, does it really matter? Maybe the Americans blew it up. Maybe the Russians blew it up. Maybe someone else blew it up. Or maybe no one blew it up. And it's entirely stories of fabrication. Whatever the truth may be, the end results remain the same. Gas and electricity will be more expensive. There'll be a huge push to turn renewables. That's the White House was talking about that. This is an opportunity to push renewables. Jeez. come on. You know, talk about climate catastrophe. Of course, they're trying to blame the single hurricane of the season, climate change, and maybe even energy rationing and blackouts. People will freeze, starve, and probably die this winter. That has always been part of the plan. What reason is there to think that the attack is anything but more of the same?
That's very well yeah. said. Yeah,
because I mean we can get into the weeds, and it is interesting. I mean, you did have Biden and Victoria Nuland at the State Department saying one way or another Nord Stream 2 will end if Russia invades, of course, and the position of the United States, the U.S. diplomacy, to call it that, in the run-up to the Russian invasion was, you know, was there to provoke a Russian invasion. It's been so obviously mismanaged on purpose that this isn't a mistake, and this is a conflict that the White House, NATO wanted to have another crisis. You know, they it's like they feed off negative energy. It's like a creature feeds off negative energy and crisis. They want constant crises, so they create them. We're still under all these emergency decrees, and again, the emergency powers create all types of revenue streams and resources, so get redirected. So they take on a life of their own outside the reality. It's like, you know, the COVID pandemic is over, but the emergency, the emergency powers that the government assumed don't go away, because there's so much money at stake and power. So they take on a life of their own. Again, at this point, how can anyone look at these governments and these officials and these generals at NATO, or look at them with any legitimacy at this point? You know, and they all should be tossed into the Baltic Ocean.
Yeah, and hopefully they all will be.
Yeah.
The pipeline explosion was, the part of the Ukrainian, crisis week, wherein you also had the referendums, being tallied and, shocked. They were like 95% of the people who voted were in favor of secession. They want to join Russia. At the same time, Zelensky signed an emergency authorization to proceed with full NATO membership. So you're going to create this situation where NATO and Russia will each own basically regions of Europe, simultaneously. And so the conflict will never stop, which we pointed out like 8 months ago. This is a political theater as a distraction and rationale for the genocide of the European people. This is just a cover for the Morgenthau 2 plan that's going into effect. But the situation in the Ukraine in terms of the military situation will obviously get worse. In other words, there'll be much more violence coming up, I guarantee you, because Putin will now say, well, you know, these people are invaders, and we have the right to just hit them with everything. Zelensky will say, well, this is an illegal annexation of a tiny democracy. And so we have to fight back with more vigor. I mean, Biden will go to the American people and make the case that we really need to get involved here to defend our democratic principles. And then you can have just a real bloodbath in the Ukraine with just a body count that'll have, two zeros in back of it relative to what's happened. And I'm sure that's what is going to occur. And you just bear in mind that in terms of like the Judeo-Masonic geopolitical structures, Tim, you have to keep your eye on the gravestones and not on the, headlines, right? Because the headlines are just their way of bamboozling people. You just got to keep counting the European gravestones, because they're going to be getting lots of them in the Ukraine, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, they're going to be getting the civilian population to start depopulating, as winter, gets into its ferocity. So this is it's as we talk about the Tim Kelly rule, which is just to remind listeners, it's, time exists so that everything doesn't happen at once. Well, here you're going to have the currency, the vaccine, the energy, the Ukrainian war, the food shortage, they're all going to at one time. And so that's how you can be absolutely sure that this is a conspiracy. This is all organized against us, and it's going to be just horrendous in Central Europe this winter. When I'm in communication with people, I'm just saying, I don't have any suggestions. Just get the hell out if you can. If you can't, you need to actually think about how to go through 2 or 3 months without energy and without any real food being brought in. It's going to be that bad. It's just going to be an absolute. And I think England is going to get hit really hard as well. I don't know if these things are true, but I've been getting a lot of like communications that there is something strange going on with UK hotels. Have you been hearing any of this? Where they're evidently bringing in all of these foreign men of military age and they're occupying all of these hotels. And the thought is that they could be the troops of martial law come winter, which would be needed because England is as fragile as the pattern on a butterfly's wing. And I mean, the people may need some stern martial law control because, this is when the rubber is going to hit the road. We'll see just what we're made of. Because when you start starving, when your children are starving, and here's the rationale, the bamboozlement, and here's your child ready to die, what will fathers do? What direction are they going to turn in? I think you're going to see that the unvaccinated squads really will know how to fight. And they aren't going to just go down, let their children starve to death or freeze to death. They're going to stand up against the government. And this will be really, when the future will be decided, So next couple years, man, it's going to be just, I don't know what to say. It's going to be a fistfight.
Well, like I said, you look at some of these conflicts, all of this was avoidable. Of course, there's nothing objectively unavoidable about these things. I mean, whether it's the economy or these conflicts or even resource, even the scarcity, which is being created, it's being manufactured to fomenting these crises, like blowing up pipelines. Wow, there's an energy crisis. Yeah. Cutting off trade. Yeah, that'll create shortages. That will do that, especially when you create a globalist system that was interconnected and interdependent, as they say, supposed to create stability, and it's become an opportunity to actually destabilize the world and impoverish one sector to enrich a few. But when you look at something like the Ukraine, the crisis in the Ukraine, and people rightly say this has nothing to do with U.S. national interest, but this kind of misses the point, because the way the United States is now, the current United States really has no national interest because it operates kind of as a globalist front. It's ruled by we all know who's running it. At least foreign policy. It's run by Jews. In the United States. It's an instrument for Jewish supremacy. Actually, the role of the U.S. is to serve those interests, and that's why we don't have borders that are defended, but we're worried about borders in the Ukraine. It's absurd. And that's why Europe is going to starve for these interests, for these cosmopolitan, transnational, corporate, Judeo interests, that seem to be controlling. That's why it doesn't seem to make any sense. Why do we have these people ensconced at the State Department or, at CIA, or at the Treasury that are, they're just, creating a dumpster fire out of everything? It's obviously intended. So that's how you have to understand is the United States doesn't really have any interests. And you don't have to, Joe Biden, you have to stop worrying about Joe Biden. He really doesn't have any power. That's obvious. He may have made that threat, but he's not the one that ordered that pipeline bombing. He doesn't have any power. We should talk about the people around Joe Biden. That you may get a better by people who his handlers, whether it's Ron Klain, or Blinken. These characters of the same tribe, you might get a better idea of who's controlling the show here. But it's not being done in the interest of Americans, particularly white Americans. So now what do you do? If you can't address that reality, and we're still thinking in terms of nations and states and governments, obviously we're not, because obviously the German government doesn't represent the German people. In fact, they've admitted as much. But nevertheless, we've had sort of this populist uprising, which is kind of expected in Sweden. The Swedish Democrats are part of the government, although I think from what I understand is they're being maneuvered so they won't have any ministerial positions But there's been a reaction to what Sweden has been made to suffer the past few years with immigration. And apparently Sweden's now the rape capital of Europe because they've been enriched by people from North Africa. You had this election in Italy, Giorgia Meloni and her, the Brothers of Italy party is going to form a coalition government. Now, these coalitions are awkward. Understanding European politics is a little difficult, but she's got enough. She's going to form a coalition. She's a populist conservative, although she's on the reservation on a lot of issues. Like she, says the right things about Israel, and she supports NATO. She apparently supported the efforts, NATO's efforts in the Ukraine. But nevertheless, she has come out and addressed globalism. She gave a speech. She says, "This is please answer me these questions. This is about what we are doing here today. Why is the family an enemy? Why is the family so frightening? There's a single answer to all these questions because it defines us, because it is our identity, because everything that defines us is now an enemy for those who like us to no longer have identity and to be a perfect consumer slaves." And so they attack national identity, they attack religious identity, they attack gender identity, they attack family identity. "I cannot define myself as Italian, Christian, woman, mother, no. I must be citizen X, gender X, parent one, parent two. I must be a number, because when I'm only a number, when I am no longer an identity or roots, then I will be a perfect slave at the mercy of the financial speculators, the perfect consumer. That's the reason why. That's why we inspire so much fear. That's why this event inspires so much fear, because we do not want to be numbers. We will defend the value of the human being, every single human being, because each of us is a unique genetic code that is unrepeatable, and like it or not, that is sacred. We will defend it. We will defend God, country, and family." So that's apparently going to be the next prime minister of Italy, the first woman prime minister, really historic. So I don't know to what extent these sentiments will be transferred into policy. Again, all right, I think it was Van der Leyen, the head of the, EU Commission, threatened Italy. They didn't vote the right way. They voted the wrong way, so let's see what happens. So there is a reaction to all this, at least at the political process.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's controlled opposition, but man, oh man, if she is, she's one of the best ones I've ever seen. She really hit a lot of really good points, and not just in that speech, but in many speeches. So, this is great, moving in the right direction. We need to have more aggressive representatives with the same philosophies, right? Who are just saying enough is enough, and we are, we're going to arm the people against the political class who are illegitimate. That would be a real politician in my mind, something like that. She's not there, but just the fact that these ideas are in play is very, very useful. And the people who are able to rebel can use them. You see what I mean? She sets up platforms for going further, and so I was very happy that she was elected. I was happy to see the Sweden First group do so well. And these are our symptoms of resistance. And underneath that, the independent media, very active in Italy, certainly. And so, we're coming to a head here. Something has to break.
Yeah, I think Europe is probably in its most there's probably not been so much ferment for revolution since probably 1848.
I agree completely. That's exactly right. And especially, Tim, if you subtract the vaccinated from that equation, if you look at the people who are able to resist the vaccine, who are skeptical of the bamboozlement, if you look inside that cohort, you'll see that this is really 1848 all over again. That cohort can actually fight. That's what my position is. And they need to stop even paying any attention to, the issues that are being presented to distract the vaccinated as they walk into the grave. Forget that, you know, just try to develop your own media. The media that is really, I think, the kind of the future is the Irish Light. I don't know if you've been following that, but it's an independent newspaper, very small, but it simply, you know, every month or so creates an edition. It gets it out.
Is that Gemma O'Dottery's?
Yeah. It's completely legitimate, and it talks about the genocide of the Irish people. It describes a political class very clearly, doesn't pull any punches, and they can't even print enough of these newspapers. And you see, print is really important because they can't control the content. You see, yeah. They can't, you know, they can't edit, they can't censor, they can't get rid of it. So this the Irish Light, what I've been trying to do is to recommend to people that I think are, you know, energetic in Sweden and in Italy to try to follow that with the Italian Light and the Swedish Light, and just bring out even if it's just a small pamphlet every couple weeks, but a legitimate and honest description of the fact that it isn't just the German people that are under the grind of the Morgenthau Plan too. It's all Europeans. We're all in this together. We need to unify I'm pretty sure this will start happening. I know, in fact, that both in Sweden and Italy, they're trying to organize this. And so then when you start getting papers across Europe that are all focused in the same way and are describing the same, you know, they're articulating the details of the genocide. So bamboozlement's falling away. The clarity of the struggle is getting more vivid. Now the fighting can begin because the people will have them, you know, and particularly when you combine things like the Irish Light newspaper with good use of whatever internet media is available, we can get going real quick. And we're going to have to, because it's going to be a cold winter, brother.
Yeah, it's with regarding Georgia Maloney, when she was when her party won enough votes to form this coalition. I think it was NBC News. They go, not since 1922's Mussolini's March on Rome. Invoking fascism. 100 years ago, Mussolini marches on Rome, his black shirt. So it's like, okay. Now, it's funny because they're calling her a fascist. We've talked about fascism, what it is. And of course, according to, the estimations of neurotic Jews who developed the authoritarian personality, yes, she is a fascist, because she talks about family, community, religious identity, national identity, family identity. Now, right, that puts her very high up, at least her rhetoric puts her very high up on the S scale, doesn't it?
She fails it completely. I mean, that little speech she gave would literally be the description of the complete failure of all of the scales inside the authoritarian personality.
Yeah, their black dashboard would be blinking red all over. Beep, beep, oh, beep.
You can just see the little scientist sitting there with her test scores, you know, and just trying to figure out how they can arrest her. So, I mean, that there it is, you know. Yeah. It's the battle lines are about as clear as they can ever be.
Because anti-fascism and like anti-racism really is just anti-white Christian, right? That's what it is.
That's all it is, of course.
Yeah. You know, and racism is a great term of abuse because it has this ever-changing definition, and that's what makes it so effective. It's just
the Swiss Army knife of sophistry, just like the Holocaust, you know, which can just, it can just be anything they need it to be, you know, at any particular point in time.
Yes.
And so these are just structures to keep us bamboozled. They worked really well for 70 years.
But what happens in Europe, though? You have NATO, right? You have this, go back to this pipeline bombing, where I think everyone kind of knows who did it. Now, whether or not it was specifically the U.S. military or Ukrainian military or Poles, whatever, they're operating obviously under the direction of NATO and the U.S. Empire, which, again, as I mentioned earlier, isn't really America. It's this transnational Judeo, you know, criminal cabal that's running things. NATO is an instrument of that. We have a situation now, nevertheless, where attacking a pipeline that is vital to the economic life of Europe could be construed as an attack on a NATO country. And so if an entity within that NATO command structure did this, we have a situation where NATO has attacked NATO. Now, is there an article in NATO's charter to deal with that? And so, but even if it's not officially declared, people are going to know this. And I have to imagine even in France and in Germany, and this is probably why it was done. It could be a misstep, because this could be this could fracture NATO, because people realize, wait a second, you know, what happened was, when I was reading, what was going on is the back channels, peace was breaking out. And Putin said, you lift the sanctions, pipelines go back on, and everyone's happy. And they'll be warm this winter, they can get back to work, and they might not starve to death. That was the offer. And then that's when the pipelines were attacked. People know this, not stupid. And so even some of these politicians that have publicly said, you know, no matter what, we're gonna stand with Ukraine, no matter what our people, you know, no matter what happens to our people, like that Bayerbach or that German official, that lady, that was her public pronouncements. But what was going on behind the scenes? From what I understand, there were negotiations going on. There was fracturing. And so this is done just almost like Cortez burning his ships, you know.
Well, you know, Tim, it's like if you look at the historical maps, I mean, like a 2004 presidential election in the Ukraine, it's not a natural country.
No.
One fraction of it voted overwhelmingly for Yanukovych. The other fraction, the West, voted for, you know, somebody else. And so, you know, the country was an artificial creation. It has no history. There's no reason to try to keep it with the boundaries that it has today.
Other than to create a pretext for a conflict.
Well, that's exactly right.
That's it.
And so this would be a completely natural point to end it, with Russia happy, the individuals who are living inside these regions who are ethnic Russians, who speak Russian, who are being slaughtered by Zelensky's thugs, and who had numerous agreements with both NATO, the U.S., ever since the negotiations to conclude the Soviet Union, that would give these regions special autonomous powers, right, which have all been violated. And they included, incidentally, the right to their own elections, the rights to their own police force. Right. So they were really kind of quasi autonomous zones from the very beginning of the Ukraine following the Soviet Union collapse. So you have a conclusion that, you know, could easily be attained here, which would be sane and moral, would end the fighting, the energy would turn back on. And just like that guy told McCarthy, that's why we know that it's a conspiracy, because we never win.
Yeah, James Forrestal, yeah.
Not get a break, even though what should occur here is so natural, so obvious. No chance it's going to happen. The conflict, we discussed this like, I don't know, 8 months ago. The conflict's never going to end. The conflict will end when the depopulation has been obtained. Because that's what this conflict is.
When the current political class is just tossed out.
That's the other hope, yeah.
Yeah, and so, I mean, because, again, this speaks to this Mackinder thesis and this, you know, all reason why this is, you know, Germany has always been the primary target in this, because they don't want Germany being strong and independent. That German, sort of the pivot of Europe is Germany. So it has to remain conquered and under control. And what you got with these pipelines and this sort of this economic condominium that was forming between Germany and Russia, which there sort of is, there's a national alliance there, because Germany has a lot of high tech and industry, but it needs energy. Russia has very little high tech industry, but has lots of energy. It's a natural partnership. But again, if that happens, then the Anglo-American Zio Empire is out of the picture. And what happens with the dollar? What happens with the economic dominance and these things? And so they won't be in a position to manipulate and control world affairs if these other countries get independent. Yeah, mankind, humanity would be better off, but those who control things wouldn't control things as much. And these people would rather, reign in hell than serve in heaven. So they're willing to bring everything down to maintain their control. That's how deranged and insane these people are. Well, but that's why they're blowing up pipelines and letting people starve.
But just remember that, their commitment to European genocide is absolute. Look at the September 11th as the date of George Bush Sr.'s Brave New World Order speech, right? And then exactly 10 years to the day later, that was the attack on the World Trade Center. September 11th is Tisha B'Av. Mm-hmm. That's the day when the temple was destroyed in 70 CE. And so that's the orientation these people have. That's how insane they are. They're still fighting the war in the first century. And they still believe they have the moral perspective that is justified by the things that were going on in that era. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why, when they created the Nazi Party, they set it up as, they had it as like Roman legions, right? With, of course, the swastika. So this is the world we live in is hard to understand. It's just, all of these wars, all of, this slaughtering. Well, it isn't hard for them to understand. They're bringing all this about. This is all, and it's just the level of hatred and commitment to the genocide is pretty much absolute.
Yeah, and you're going to have instability and revolution. Sorry, if your cabinet, your governments are full of Jews, and that's the Biden administration.
Yeah,
because they're revolutionary sect. They have their particular interests, and our government isn't representing us. That's why the governments of Germany and France and Italy aren't representing Italians, French, and Germans.
Well, they were in a revolutionary phase, but now they're in the genocide phase. Mm-hmm. There's hardly anything to revolt against. They have all the political power. It's just a question of how they can use it in order, to get us stubborn and tenacious, Europeans off the planet. It's like I said, just keep your eye on the gravestones and forget, don't bother. I mean, I get asked a lot about the Ukrainian war. I actually, in a bizarre thing a couple of years ago, it was 2014 or something, I had a chance to be on the Ren Network in Russia and talked about the history of the Ukrainian thing. I talked about the Holodomor and how Stalin set up, the Ukraine and things. And I kind of went along with, the historical narrative, and I kind of kicked myself in hindsight. I should have just pointed out this whole thing is bamboozlement, don't believe any of it. Think of, the right perspective is the Christmas armistice. Mm-hmm. That perspective is that, the Russian soldiers and the Ukrainian soldiers, the ones that are getting slaughtered, they should have communications and say, this is just like World War One, the trench warfare stuff. There's no rationale here for anything. There's no reason for this conflict other than that the people who have the ability to control us want us dead. So what to do? Well, stop fighting one another. I still am upset, Tim, about World War One. I mean, my grandfather was sent over the top at the Somme into automatic weapon fire. They lost 60,000 people in an afternoon. He was mustard gas, lived his whole life coughing and hacking. He never really recovered. And Kitchener got a medal or the slaughter, you know. So Freemason. So you know, that's, you know, it's the world was very confusing for all these years, and now finally it's not. It's get the fog is clearing up, and we can kind of see what the world is, you know.
Yep, a moment of clarity.
Yes, sir.
Okay, Joe.
All right, Tim, good talking to you, brother. We'll get him next week.
Okay, get some rest, get better.
Yeah, thank you. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye-bye.